Absolute future plan. Good morning, everybody, and just let me extend a very big welcome to you all as well for this day of practice. It is primarily a practice day, so I will say a few things at the beginning of the day, and I shall say something after lunch and talk a little bit around the topic. But the day is really dedicated to practice. It's dedicated to overcoming a seeming dichotomy, which actually is not a real dichotomy. And it's there in the title of this weekend, or this day, I should say, which is that people tend to think that there are two practices that we engage in. And in fact, you know, if you look at London Insight Programme, if you look at Gaia House, you'll find lots of what we call Vipassana-type meditation courses, don't we? You'll look through, you'll see insight meditation, Vipassana courses, mindfulness courses, and then occasionally, as an adjunct to that, you'll find courses which are developing metta, devoted to metta or compassion or loving kindness is the usual translation for metta. And so you'll find those as an adjunct to this more serious business of doing insight practice, as if it's a sort of poor relation out there. And when you got fed up a little bit with doing the insight practice, you go away and do a bit of metta. I want to kind of overcome that dichotomy, because it's a really false dichotomy of thinking that these are two separate practices. It's so easy for us to do that, as I say, simply because of the way programs are set up, the way the teaching goes, that we tend to think they are two separate practices. And this goes back to a very ancient period. It goes back to the commentarial tradition, which is, I'm not going to go into the history too much of this, but goes right back to a commentarial tradition, which basically somebody called Buddhaghosa in the 5th century decided that he didn't know where to stick practices which we call roughly the Brahma Viharas. These practices which include, well, I'm going to use the old translation first and then problematize it later. Loving kindness, compassion. Well, empathetic joy is probably better than sympathetic joy. It's a bit patronizing, sympathetic. And then, of course, equanimity. He didn't know where to put those practices. And so they became a sort of adjunct. And I think we've actually followed through with that. And this is really a great shame. It's really a great shame. He even goes even further and says these practices like metta, this practice of loving kindness, is actually really not even an insight practice. It's just a concentration practice. And what will happen in traditional Theravada Buddhism, if you practice this, you'll get born in the Brahma realms. This just sounds weird stuff, doesn't it? Sounds really, really weird stuff. What I want to basically take us through, in certainly my expositions during the day, is the idea that these are not two separate practices. They are two different angles on the same practice. They are both aimed at the development of some kind of insight, whatever we might think that is, whatever we think insight is. I don't need to go further. I'll quote the whole thing to you later on, so don't worry. But in a very ancient text, it comes out of this collection of early Buddhist texts, which is known as the Pali Canon. Pali Canon is written in a strange language called Pali, which was never really a spoken language. It's very close to spoken languages, but it was never a spoken language. But it was used to preserve the early Buddhist texts. It's the only complete set of Indian texts we have in any language, in Indian languages. It's absolutely complete. It was closed at a certain period just before the Christian era. It was closed at that period and nothing else was admitted into it. And so it's a complete set of texts, and it goes back to the very ancient period. And this is a long way of getting around to saying, actually, in the most ancient section of this set of texts, which is huge, it's voluminous, I mean, it really, really is big. In this most ancient part of the text, there is a very tiny little text called the Metta Sutta. Metta Karanya Sutta, actually, is the actual full title of it. And in that little sutta, the Buddha makes very profound claims, and in a sense, that's what I want to explore with you today. He makes the claim that metta is sati. Sati is the word that's usually translated as mindfulness. He calls it a satim, actually, in the original language. And he makes this statement, which I'll read, as I say, to you fully later on. With the development of this, there is no better way of living in this world. No better way of living in this world. I mean, isn't that a profound statement? Even if we translated this in the old way, and as I say, I'm going to problematize this a little bit, but even if we translate this in the old way of loving kindness, you know, and I think there's all sorts of problems with that translation, but you know, if we even be translated in that way, the Buddha is making the claim this is a mindfulness, and there is no better way of living in this world, not another world, not being reborn in a Brahma realm or any of this sort of stuff, but there is no better way of living in this world than with this particular stance on life. Yeah. And that's a real insight. It's a real insight. I don't know many teachers who have made at the forefront of their teaching the teaching of basically, well, here's the translation I'm going to use, friendliness and compassion as being the real centre of what they're teaching, but not in some kind of metaphysical way, but as a really practical thing to do. Exhibited particularly in acts of kindness, in acts of compassion. In fact, even that is a false dichotomy, to say there is friendliness and then there is compassion. Again, it makes them sound like two different practices. One is the natural outflowing of the other. When we have a friendlier stance on the world, then it flows out in terms, rather, of what I call outgoing acts of kindness. If I have a friendly attitude, and I'll say this again because I think it's really important as our starting point for the day, if we have a friendlier attitude, then it naturally starts to manifest as simple, not complex, big issues. And when people, we hear the word compassion, I don't know about you, but I have kind of big kind of visions of what compassion might look like. In the Mahayana tradition, I often talk about maha karuna, big compassion, great compassion. And it makes it sound like something that I could personally never aspire to. But it's in these little outgoing acts of kindness, actually what the Buddha is really referring to as karuna, or compassion. Little acts. Even thinking about people when they're not there and doing something for them. You don't even have to be confronted with an individual. You know, you might be preparing something for them to arrive. You know, just a guest coming into your house, preparing something, spending time thinking about how to make that person comfortable. I can say for myself, and you've probably seen I've been sort of hobbling around in crutches, one of the things I've been very grateful for is all the time and trouble that London Insight have gone to kind of arranging things for me, you know, to put me in an easier way of being able to move around in this particular period for me. You know, and I think it's those acts which we really have to see as acts of compassion and kindness, not these big, vast things that perhaps some of us just think are too uphill and too big for us to do. Where does this all start? Well, it starts with ourselves. It starts in the manifestation of acts of kindness towards ourselves. And I think living as we do and coming, perhaps most of us, certainly having contact and living in Christian cultures, post-Christian cultures, the big thing has often been that perhaps this is self-indulgent. And this is not an attack on Christianity, by the way, it's just that it's a difference in emphasis. That often, you know, for example, Protestantism has had that movement outwards towards the other, which is really important. I'm not denying that, and you've heard me say already that this is so fundamentally important. But often with a denial of any care for the self. Any real care for the self. And what the Buddha makes very, very clear in these earliest strata of texts, and I'm talking about texts, it makes them sound rather dry and academic, but it isn't. This is really practical stuff. He was a practical teacher, teaching very practical issues, is that this care that we want to perhaps aspire to manifest towards others, the compassion that perhaps we'd like to move around the world with a little more than we do at present, for us to really manifest it, we have to start with ourselves. Yeah. And interestingly enough, he doesn't really even start to talk about it as being a feeling, but an act. Mm-hmm. Something we do. Yeah. I've said to so many groups over the years that sometimes we live under what I call a myth of authenticity in the West. In the Western world, and this certainly isn't true living often in Asian cultures. The myth of authenticity that we have in the Western world is, for me to really do something, I've got to feel it. Haven't I? I've got to really feel it, you know. If I don't feel it, it's somehow hypocritical to do that. And this has always been such a different attitude in the East. I was telling a story yesterday, actually, so I was prompted by somebody who's already here today to tell the story again. You know, one of the things that in my own training I always remember, and it's, yeah, I don't mind repeating it because it's such an important little thing, which is that, you know, somebody was berating one of the teachers, saying, "You keep telling me to feel compassionate. I don't feel compassionate." And the teacher looked at him rather bemused, rather quizzically, and said, "Feel? What's that got to do with it? Just behave compassionately." Yeah. And so this becomes about behaviour as well. And so there's this kind of mythology, as I say, that we operate on from the West. It's got to kind of be movement inward, outward. Mm. Have the feeling, has to then manifest as an action. In the Buddhist tradition, often, not always, and we can't say anything it was always to be the case, but in many cases the Buddha says if you want to really know something that isn't necessarily there in your psyche at this moment in time, engage in the acts attached to it. So in other words, if you want to feel, if you don't naturally feel, say, generous or kind, then actually engage in acts of generosity and kindness. And perhaps you might get a clue about what it actually feels like. So it's simply a difference from the way that we often act in the West. Now, I'm saying all of this because one of the things we often don't do, we laud it, and then, you know, as I say, as a culture, we certainly don't denigrate it. We see kindness and compassion perhaps as important. You know, compassion, to suffer with, literally, you know, from the Latin version of this. And there are many great similarities between this and the stance that we take in this tradition. But often that doesn't start with ourselves. It doesn't start with ourselves. It's all focused on the other. Now, the Buddha takes a balanced view that for there to be real care, concern, compassion, and kindness in this world, you know, without, in a sense, ending up with a deficit. And I see so many people in the West, and you know, I'm sure some of you do as well. I mean, I've talked to groups, for example, over the years, NHS groups, for example, who are involved in care. And I could be speaking to a group, as I was a few years ago, a group of 15 people. A third of them were off with long-term burnout. Yeah. These are not uncaring people. In fact, their caring is so manifest that they do burn out. You know? But they don't care for themselves a lot of the time. You know? Now, this is not, you know, invariable, the groups vary, but I've seen this again and again and again, that there seems to be this outward flow, which is so important, but not actually this basic act of caring for ourselves as well. This is not self-indulgence, it's simply common sense. Yeah. If you really want something, some if you want some resource or pool to draw on in your being with people, whether that's in a manifest caring situation or just being with your friends, your family, and the difficult relations and all the sorts of things that arise, then sometimes you need that, don't you, in life. You need that resource to draw on. You know, what we call meditation and this practice itself is a resource to draw on. But there are particular practices which are associated with metta, which are so important as being ways of resourcing ourselves in acts of kindness towards ourselves. And in many ways, this is the reason why I'm saying this. I'm going to shut up in a second and we're going to do some practice. But in many ways, one of the things that it becomes so important is that we have the right attitude about the kind of practices that we're doing, if we're doing what I generally call meditation practices. But meditation is not another act of, how would I put it, self-laceration. Meditation is an act of self-kindness. In fact, it can be the most fundamental act of self-kindness. Where we start to listen to ourselves a little bit more. We listen, you know, we listen in an open, perhaps, and friendlier way to some of the really difficult stuff that arises for us. And I think we all know, particularly those, I mean, I don't know what kind of experience people have here. I know there's many experienced people here, but, you know, even if you're an experienced practitioner, difficult stuff arises again and again and again. And in fact, it's almost like strata, isn't it? You know, you hit one level of difficulty, go into a nice, calmer period, and then another level of difficulty arises. It's like it's going like through the stratas, almost, of this. And the most basic act of kindness, and I think that's manifest, and this is where we're going to start today, nothing difficult, nothing actually you haven't done before, but really with the sense of a gentle turning towards whatever is arising for you at this moment, whether that be physical sensation and pain, uncomfortableness, or whether that be something which is difficult emotionally, thought-wise, or whatever that might come up in your mind. One of the basic attitudes, perhaps, I put this out as a generalisation, and you know, just for what it's worth, one of the basic acts I think often that we engage in the West, if there is something difficult, particularly emotionally, that's going on for us, if we don't go into therapy and all the rest of it, is that we turn away from it and get on with our business. Turn away from it and get on with doing what we should do. Don't be so self-indulgent. And if this keeps occurring, then we kind of beat ourselves up for it because we shouldn't be doing this. And long-term meditators are just as bad. Sometimes, you know, I'm a long-term meditator, this shouldn't be happening to me. But it does, doesn't it? It does, you know, no matter what level of, you know, whether you're a beginner or whether you're a long-term meditator, difficult stuff arises. The most basic act of kindness, and this is where we start, and this is why the most basic act of kindness, the most basic act of mindful awareness, mindful present moment awareness, is a turning towards whatever is there. Be that something pleasant, be that something unpleasant, as I've indicated, which often arises in our experience. And so the most, if you like, the most fundamental act of friendliness that we engage in is when we don't ignore and don't push away what is there for us. And in a way, that's where everything begins, from that attitude. If I don't ignore my own difficulties, perhaps it makes me more responsive to not ignoring the difficulties I see around me, the difficulties I see others. Perhaps it makes me more resonant, more responsive to what is going on for others if I don't turn away. Unkindness can become a habit. Take any manifestation of any psychological state, we can turn it into a habit really easily. Yeah, and unkindness becomes that. You know, get on and do your stuff. You know, either telling that, screaming that to yourself, it doesn't work though, does it? I don't know if you felt. Go away, I don't like you, go away. It doesn't happen. That unkindness becomes so deeply ingrained in us, we almost make it a virtue. And it reflects, and I've heard this, I'm sure some of you might have heard something very similar as well, perhaps over the years. Yeah. Have you ever heard somebody say to you, somebody, look, I'm only being as hard on you as I am on myself. Which basically really translates as, look, I'm beating you up because I beat me up. And so what we're attempting to do in this practice, in this fundamental state, before introducing any of the kinds of reflections or practices that I want to just briefly touch on in this day to give you a sense of this direction, is that ability to sit with what is there. What is passing through this mental, physical continuum at this moment? Not what you would like to happen, but what is actually just happening. That can be boredom. It's a wonderful teaching, boredom. I love boredom. I've had plenty of opportunity actually since recently. But it can also be those difficulties that manifest. Whatever is there, whatever is passing through this mental, physical continuum, acknowledge it. Say hello to it. Don't push it away. This is the most fundamental act, as I've said. I've gone a long way around just to get back to the same place. This is the most basic act of kindness that we can offer to ourselves. And then it becomes possible to build on this. Now, that basic act of turning towards is awareness. This is what gets called generally mindfulness. It's a word I'm beginning to really dislike. So much so, I spent yesterday with the group I was teaching yesterday going through all possible permutations of not using the word mindfulness for what we're doing in these practices. But I'm rather stuck with it because I'm kind of trustee of the Oxford Mindfulness Centre. I was suggesting one of the ways that we should look at this, what we call mindfulness, is as present moment awareness. Doesn't really trip off as a title for an organisation, doesn't it? The Oxford Present Moment Awareness Centre. So, anyway, I'm stuck with this, but this is the most basic act of mindfulness, but it's also the most basic act of kindness. So these are not two separate practices. And I will share more with you as we go through the day. But just to get us started, to put us in this frame, let me just give you a brief quote. I'll probably say it again at the end of the day. Let's start the day with this quote and finish the day with the quote. And it comes from the early Buddhist texts, purported to be said by the Buddha. Very basic, but see if you can really listen to it, really hear it. I won't read it fast, I'll read it quite slowly. Looking after oneself, one looks after others. Looking after others, one looks after oneself. How does one look after others? By looking after oneself. By practicing mindfulness, developing it, making it grow in your life. How does one look after oneself? By looking after others. By the practice of patience, of non-harming, of friendliness, kindness and caring. I don't really need to say any more at this stage. Okay, so what we're going to do is divide up the day between, as I'm sure you all know, sitting and walking. So we'll start off with a very basic mindfulness sit. And then I shall take it into developing some of the more meta-based practices.